Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 22nd day of December 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that is where you go if you would like to join in the multimedia madcap real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room between the hour during the hours during which this program is live Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you go there, you'll be met by denizens of the Horn. You'd even be met by me if the tired old production computer would just let me in. But I'm not there right now, so I can't tell you who's there right now. But I guarantee you, you'll have a lovely time if you just pop in. Go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you don't already have one, and bang, you'll be there. Now, of course, I would be remiss if I did not note at the beginning of the program, as I always do, that this is a listener-supported broadcast, and this is a listener-supported broadcast in a hole. Yeah, really. I regret to say, but Yeah, hey, up there, anybody? It's me, Bob. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Down in a hole with the rest of the Horn. Not very reassuring. Anybody up there? Lassie, please go tell them that the Horn's down a well. Okay? Lassie, are you there? Sigh. But really, we are. We're in a $465 fundraising hole. And that is extremely stressful. No kidding. It's very stressful indeed. So, hopefully that will remedy. I mean, it's not impossible. It's just a little, distressing. But still, $465. What does that work out to? $46.50 for 10, or 10 at 40, or 46 and a half people at $10 a piece, or 10 people at $46.50, or something like that. But at any rate, that's where we are. If you would like to throw a few shovelfuls of earth in on the hole so that we can walk out, or, you know, lower a rope or whatever, whatever metaphor you prefer, just go to, headonradionetwork.com and click on contribute and put in the amount and fill out and leave out the part about what you do and where you do it and why you do it and who you do it for. Just get to the next screen, and once you're there, you'll be able to make your choice about PayPal balances and credit cards and what have you. It would be extremely helpful, because the idea of going into Friday on the Front Porch with a $665 fundraising hole, that's almost insurmountable. And what that, you know, what that represents is, you know, that we are more than 2 days behind in what we do to keep the lights on here. And I'm really not kidding about, you know, keeping the lights on. That's what this does. Well, I mean, except for the Gulfstream 5 and the Maybach and Agnes's masseur and the cabana attendant out there by the Olympic pool with the Elgin marbles that we bought. I thought the Elgin marbles were statues. It turns out they're marbles from Elgin, Illinois. But the cabana attendant and the masseur draw a little circle in the ground, and they play with the Elgin marbles. And yeah. But no, seriously, we need to raise $465 this evening. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, cheap. Real cheap. So hopefully that situation will be remedied over the course of the program. I'll help us maybe keep track of how far we've gotten. No, sorry. Marty says, haven't you gotten the update on the outfitting of the Horn's new A380 yet? There's a backlog, so we decided just to stick with the Gulfstream 5. I mean, we really don't need to take 500 people. It's, you know, small jets are fine. Yeah. Thank you very kindly, Clarence. Clarence just got us started. It is no longer a $465 hole. It's just a $400 hole. And so hopefully Clarence will get some company here in the next few minutes, and we'll do some serious bill paying after the program is over. So I got to add the part where if you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, you can always mail it in. Checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never see him. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. When he knows there's something in the mailbox, he goes over to the UPS store where the box is, where the Klan is also a valued customer. And if there's a check there, he leaves the spider-proof gloves in the truck, and he just takes a shovel with him in case he runs into the Grand Dragon. And so, consequently, if you want to do that, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. That stands for Personal Mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa says, straits must be Mike Dyer. You rarely resort to reverb in the first 5 minutes. I'll match the next 50 that come in. So that would take us down to $300 if somebody would match Ace's 50. And that'll go a long way toward, well, that would take us down to $300. That's just 10 at 30 and 1 at 300 and 2 at 150 and 4 at 75 and 8 at 37.50, etc. Yeah. All right, let's see if the machine is going to cooperate and actually, you know, let me into the chat room. I'm really excited in hopes that it will. Of course, it may very well just, you know, freaking crash like it did in the middle of the program the other night. These things happen. But there we are. Hey, chat room. Wow, nice crowd in there this evening, y'all. Good evening, Anatole, Don from Central PA, Arthur, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Jules, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, Stockton Larry, and VT Blom. And they're all just waiting for you. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. So we're waiting for you. We absolutely are. Now, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we are not without our fair share of briars and thorns and stickers and, yeah. So, where to begin? Apparently, I'm not going to dignify that with a response, Arthur. But it is funny. Sorry. Hey, where to begin this evening? Hey, you remember? Remember the story out of Whitefish, Montana, last night? Remember that? The story about how some filthy Nazi over at Stormfront published the names and addresses and phone numbers and email addresses and personal information about six people who happened to be Jewish so that other Nazis could torment them there in Whitefish, Montana. And the torment had begun. Remember that? And of course, I'm sure you remember that that is strictly, you know, that's not white supremacy. That's not Nazism. That's economic anxiety. Because the poor Nazis are just all economically anxious and worried after 8 long, miserable years of that one in our White House. Yes. Well, the economic anxiety is apparently deeply entrenched in Pennsylvania as well. Mm-hmm. At the Centerville Elementary School, they were planning on putting on an elementary school production of A Christmas Carol. Right? Scrooge, Marley. Yeah. These chains I... Wait. These chains I forged in life, Scrooge! It's reverb twice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, Arthur, in the chat room. Now, Bob. Now, Bob is okay. Now, Bob is all right. That's not Bob, Bob, Bob. So you haven't gimmick infringed. Now, Bob, says Arthur. Nazis have feelings too, you know. I know. And they're tender feelings. And they do so love their Christmas season, they do. And that's why they got so upset when the Centerville Elementary School canceled the performance of A Christmas Carol. Now, why would they do that? Well, it turns out if mounting a production of A Christmas Carol is no easy feat, even for a professional theater company. You've seen the movie Scrooged. I mean, that was a live... Okay, it's not reality, it's a movie. But anyway, it turned out that rehearsals for A Christmas Carol were taking a ton of extracurricular time away and in-class time away from the young scholars at Centerville Elementary School there in Pennsylvania. And so the school canceled the play. But that wasn't good enough for Fox News, for Glenn Beck's The Blaze. The Beckerhead is, okay, he's back. Yeah, there wasn't any, no, there was no seat change there. No, sorry. Fox News, The Blaze, and that website that rhymes with light and fart and smells about the same, grabbed the story and ran with it. And blamed the cancellation on the war... Damn, we're going to be busy tonight. War on Christmas! claiming that the school canceled the play because of parents complaining about the one line, the very famous line in the play, and in the, you know, the original story by Charles Dickens, "God bless us, everyone." You know, the one that Tiny Tim utters at the yes. Now, when those when Fox picked up and lied, and when Lightfart lied, and when The Blaze lied, economically anxious people all over the country began inundating that school system with hateful messages of the love of Jesus H. Christ. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. And as a result, hey, guess who they aimed their hatred at? There were more than 200 complaints directed to the school, and then the Lightfart Nazis, bless their tender hearts, then the Lightfart Nazis demanded to be given the home address and other personal information of a Jewish family who they are quite certain is responsible for the fact that there will be no Christmas carol at Centerville Elementary School because Jews. And so the family, like unto another Jewish family some 2,000 years ago, according to myth, I have taken it on the lam away from their home for fear of reprisals. You know, Mary and Joseph fleeing with the baby Jesus into Egypt. That one? Yeah. According to Lancaster Online, the Jewish family has boogied, saying there's no way we're going to take a chance after the pizza incident. Talking about what happened what was it? Ping pong pizza? In D.C. And just to be clear, they made abundantly obvious that they hadn't complained about the play. They did ask for their child to be excused from the performance, which is understandable, but not to the economically anxious Trumpanzees who are hell-bent on creating a theocracy in the midst of a fascist dictatorship. And let's face it, those kind of go together like, oh, I don't know, chips and dip, don't they? They just didn't want their little kid participating in a Christian Christmas tableau. Well, why do you not want this? Ah, it must be because you killed Christ. I'm not saying that, but no, don't go over to Lightfart or Stormfront or any of those, because they say that a lot over there. Absolutely, absolutely. Ron and Raleigh reminding me. Hey, Bob, remember, Bob, it's the Jews, Billy. It's the Jews. We could write everything that's wrong about this country if it weren't for the Jews, Billy. The Jews. Right, you are, Mr. President. God bless you. Jesus knows, Mr. President, how right you are. Amen. Shall we pray, Mr. President? Yeah. Getting a little warm in here, isn't it? And by in here, I mean here in the United States of America. Toasty, even. Woof. So, you know, just be aware that this stuff is happening. And here's a surprise. One of the people you would never expect to know that this is happening apparently does. Yes, Steve in New York writing, the Jews? You mean like Jesus? Yeah, like Jesus. The very one. Funny how that works out, isn't it? No, come on. He was blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Tall. Kind of broad-shouldered. Mm-hmm. Sort of a lanky, you know, nice close-cropped haircut there. And then, you know, sort of a lantern jaw. Yeah, that Jesus, not the Jewish one. Not the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. Not old Yeshua, hero Jesus. That's who we're talking about here. But of all the people I expected to maybe speak out against the rise of fascism worldwide, I could have gone rather a long time before this name ever would have escaped my lips. Prince Charles. That one. The royal house of... Oh, what are they? Windsors. Windsors, right? They're Windsors. Chuck Windsor. Made some public remarks earlier this week. He recorded the comments for BBC Radio 4 and a program there they have called Thought for the Day. And he spoke as follows. We are now seeing the rise of many populist groups across the world that are increasingly aggressive to those who adhere to a minority faith. All of this has deeply disturbing echoes of the dark days of the 1930s when my ancestors were playing footsie with that Mr. Hitler. Oh, 6:22. Who had 6:22? Who had 6:22 p.m. Eastern Standard Time? Damn it, Gerald! Well, it was his birthday after all. No, I added the part about playing footsie, but deeply disturbing echoes of the dark days of the 1930s. As he wrapped things up, he said, please recall the story of the Nativity unfolds with the fleeing of the Holy Family to escape violent persecution. And went on to add that it might be a nice thing if people, you know, white folks, would try to dredge up a little bit of compassion for people similarly fleeing disasters in, you know, their own home lands, where people like that snuggly sugar bear Pooty Poot and his buddy Assad bombed the living bejesus out of civilian populations, that, you know. Yeah, right. So, you know, bravo to you, Prince Chuck. I'm actually kind of, it's not very often we get a chance to be proud of the British royal family. They don't do many things to make one feel so. I mean, when the penultimate current generation isn't running around in Nazi costumes at parties, well, you get the idea. Then again, that kind of runs in the blood. But Chuck rose above it. And actually managed to call out and condemn the rising tide of fascism. including but not limited to the Orange Menace, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, who's about to take the reins of government here. Thank you, Gerald. Gerald notes, please forward my winnings to the Horn General Operating Fund, all 17 cents of it. Yeah, see, the Hitler Prize, the Hitler Pool Prize goes up every time, but it had gone back to its base level, kind of like Powerball does, only in pennies, because we've had a couple of straight nights of the pool being hit. Maybe Prince Chuck has a little bit better handle on it because he's a little closer to where it's going down. Remember, the right wing fascists are on their way to dominance in Hungary, in Poland. They were a significant part of the coalition that led to Brexit, and they're on the rise in France, Germany, even Germany. So, good on you, Chuck. Proud of you. One wonders what he'll do when Benito Chito actually becomes president. Because you know Benito Chito has been demanding that the British government make Nigel Farage, I don't know, don't care. The ambassador to the United States. God only knows who he will, who Trump will name to be the ambassador to the Court of St. James. Could wind up being Ted Nugent. Or maybe Scott Baio. That'd be fun. Wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Based on Scott and Punky writing in, blue-eyed Jesus description. Based on that, you've rewritten Jimmy Dean's Big Bad John. Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip, and everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big Jesus. Big Jesus. Big Jesus. Big Bad Jesus. Okay, no more singing. I'm sorry. Ah, that's true. VT Blom pointing out in the chat room, tomorrow is Festivus. Are we ready for the airing of grievances? Because I got one. I absolutely do. And, of course, it's a grievance against Benito Chito, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. A really, really, really seriously... do not approve. And I thus air my grievance against Benito Chito for trying to incite a brand spanking new nuclear arms race. 'Cause he did. I wish I was joking, but unfortunately, I am not. So last week, that big old cuddly, smooshy bear, Pooty Poot, made a statement that, well, here's the quote. "We need to strengthen strategic nuclear forces, for that we should develop missiles capable of penetrating any current and prospective missile defense systems. We must carefully monitor any changes in balance of power and in the political military situation in the world, especially along Russian borders, and quickly adapt plans for neutralizing threats to our country." I know, he sounds a My pooty poot sounds a little bit like probably Melanoma's uncle or something, but that's what he said. He wants Russia to start a new arms race to develop a means of evading anti-missile systems. And, well, It turns out that Russia already has a larger nuclear weapon inventory than us over here, you know, moose and squirrel. You know what dawned on me the other day? Benito and Mike Pencilneck are moose and squirrel, only in, like, a sort of underdeveloped brain way. I mean, at least squirrel. Rocky is a gray squirrel. So anyway, Pooty Poot, who is just snuggly, he is positively snuggly. Pooty Poot said that. So what did how did Trump respond? Well, it was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and he was waiting for Melanoma to bring him his coffee there as he sat upon the throne of Trumpness, trying to let go of a big old pile of Trump. And with his tiny little thumbs that work so well on a telephone keyboard, he tweeted the following. He said, and it caused no small amount of consternation, that the United States needed to develop a whole bunch more nuclear weapons until the rest of the world comes to its senses. In other words, the nuking will continue until morale improves. And that is not inspiring. Not even a little bit. I would go so far as to say that it's... what's the word I'm looking for here? Oh, terrifying. Yes, terrifying. He's not even president yet, and he's conducting foreign policy 140 characters at a time. I mean, how does that make you feel? Are you all comfy? I mean, the actual words he used in his nuclear tweet and really, in however many lives, in however many years there have been in your life, did you plan on ever hearing or using that phrase, nuclear tweet? The United States must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability until such time as the world comes to its senses regarding nukes. Big, beautiful nukes. Okay, I added the big, beautiful nukes part. But, you know, he was thinking it. Yeah, I know. New York is a wonderful place to visit, and there's all kinds of entertainment options. But along the way, may I suggest that henceforward you do not go to see, even at Christmas, because I know that's kind of a Christmas tradition, don't go see the Rockettes at Radio City Music Hall. No, please. I mean, who am I to tell you what to do or not do? But I'm saying that if I had the opportunity, I wouldn't go. Why? Because in the desperate attempt to find somebody, anybody, I mean, a guy with a kazoo, for Christ's sakes, to play at Trump's inaugural, they have proudly announced that the Rockettes will be performing at the inauguration of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Really? And now we're going to bring on everybody. Yes, everybody, I know you're all excited about this. We're bringing on the Rockettes, and they're all going to, look, see, they're all carrying little copies of the Constitution, and they're going to high-kick that Constitution into outer space, because that's how you make Merca great again. Shame on them. Shame, shame, shame upon them. On the other hand, we have to offer up praise where praise is deserved. And it is most assuredly deserved in this instance. The desperate attempt to get somebody, anybody, a guy with a kazoo, really, or a triangle even, ding, to perform at the inaugural, well, it's getting a little harried. Elton John has said no. It probably came more in the form of hell no. And for that, I offer my gratitude, such not that it matters, to Sir Elton. Sir Elton said, no, absolutely not. Then they said, well, you know, we don't really want to let that Elton John... Trump voters would much rather hear from Garth Brooks. He said, no thanks. Celine Dion. Said, no. And in one of the more bizarre turns in all of this, they said that the Trump team said they had turned down Andrea Bocelli. Time to Say Goodbye, beautiful operatic Italian operatic tenor. But no, they didn't turn down Andrea Bocelli. Andrea Bocelli turned down them, saying that his fans would never forgive him. John Legend didn't even wait around to see if they would lie about him. He said in an interview with the BBC, creative people tend to reject bigotry and hate. We tend to be more liberal-minded. When we see somebody that's preaching division and hate and bigotry, it's unlikely he'll get a lot of creative people that want to be associated with him. So he said no thanks. So then to TMZ reached out to, oh my God, Gene Simmons, to see if maybe Kiss would play at the inaugural. I mean, Kiss. And when TMZ asked him, when Gene Simmons tried to answer, his wife and his daughter both screamed, no! At which point Gene Simmons said, Well, you know, the band's going to be touring Europe then. Well, his wife and daughter. No! So I never thought I would see the day that I would broadcast thanks to the wife and daughter of Gene Simmons. But that's six non-collaborators. Now, probably one of the funniest parts of all of this is that Miss Aggrieved White Privilege, Tommy Lauren, has really, really, I mean, she has seriously gotten, well, I mean, they're always in a twist, aren't they? No. Her Vanity Fairs are in a way big bunch. Because, and you know who she's mad at? You know who she's mad at? You know who she's aggrieved at? Us. Absolutely. The unloving and intolerant left. There's only a modest amount of irony and humor in a state like that, a statement like that. She went on the O'Reilly Factor. This is precious. No word yet on whether Bill offered to rub her down with a falafel or not. Fuck it. We'll do it live. Thing sucks. No, she and she brought her aggrieved white privilege machine with her. And she said,
"The tolerance really is one-sided. They seem to be pretty accepting when their narrative is pushed, but as soon as Kanye West ventures over to the other side, then that's somehow unacceptable and he doesn't hear the end of it."
That's right. Tommy Lauren, civil rights defender of Kanye West.
Now, the fact that West goes to Trump Tower and wants to reach out to our president-elect, that should be a moment that social justice warriors should relish in, because that's unity. That's what they would want. But of course not, because it's President Trump. There are still many Americans out there that fail to understand that Donald Trump will be our 45th president and that he will be inaugurated on January 20th. They haven't even accepted that yet. If they can't accept that, of course, they're not going to accept entertainers going to perform at the inauguration. This should be an exciting moment for America. God, yes, it should be. I mean, I'm excited at the prospect of watching the country that I love descend into miserable, sickening, disgusting fascism. Aren't you? And if you're not, well, liberal. Oh, yeah.
And I think didn't O'Reilly himself channel his inner Obersturmführer or whatever the fuck it is? His inner neo-Nazi? Because I seem to recall him doing that. I mean, straight up. Kind of lost his shit on the air a couple of nights ago. I mean, not to the level of fuck it, we'll do it live or any of that stuff. But, yeah. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. No. Billow, the man from Falafel, in his talking points segment. Oh, God, I don't know. Can you take this? I can't take this. but we'll just get the hockey puck out. And see how long it takes to get the nausea really running. Because I would rather have him say them than me say such disgusting words. Yeah, there it is. All right, so... Robert in Australia says, why not hire the little Freedom Girls again? You mean the little skeevy gals? I said the same thing. I think we will eventually... Well, but they can't because I think... isn't the guy who wrangled the little skeevy Freedom Gals, isn't he suing the Trump campaign, or hasn't he sued the Trump campaign? Because the Trump campaign stiffed the little skeevy gals? All right, this won't take long, but really, get the hockey puck out. I think you're going to need it.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Abolishing the Electoral College, that is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. After Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, the left in America is demanding that the Electoral College system put into place in 1787 be scrapped. But there's a hidden reason for this. As we reported, even though Secretary Clinton won the popular vote by 2.8 million, the progressive state of California provided all of that margin, Clinton defeating Trump there by about 4.3 million votes. So if the Electoral College were abolished, presidential candidates could simply campaign in the nation's largest states and cities, New York, L.A., Chicago, Houston, and rack up enough votes to pretty much win any election. That's what the left wants. That's what they want. Because in the large urban areas and blue states like New York and California, minorities are substantial.
And Bill O'Reilly don't want no substantial minorities. He likes the minorities to be insubstantial, like God intended when he placed the curse on the sons of Ham as they were getting off of the ark. And God said, thou shalt forever be insubstantial minorities.
Look at the landscape. Philadelphia, Dallas, Fort Worth, Miami. In all of these places, the minority vote usually goes heavily to the Democrats. Head to that New York City, L.A., and Chicago, San Francisco. Don't really have a national election anymore, do you? You have targeted populations. Newspapers like the New York Times and the L.A. Times have editorialized to get...
Wait a goddamn minute. You've got targeted populations. What the hell were all of those goddamn Nuremberg rallies in Cleveland and Gary and bumfuck Kentucky if they weren't targeted? Damn sure didn't see Trump holding any rallies in any of those substantial minority communities. Did you?
Rid of the Electoral College. They well know that neutralizing the largely white rural areas in the Midwest and South will assure liberal politicians get power and keep it. Talking Points believes this is all about race. The left sees white privilege in America as an oppressive force that must be done away with. Therefore...
No. God damn it, Bill. No. It's not that the left sees white privilege. White privilege is an oppressive force. How old is this old coot? What's the counter argument? That white privilege is a force for good in the world? That those were great moments in American history when people dangled by their necks from trees and had their bodies burnt and shot just for the color of their skin? Was that, that's just white privilege, making sure that America's great again. Because that remains the sneaking, ugly suspicion that the America that they want to make great again is an America that does that sort of thing.
White working class voters must be marginalized. And what better way to do that than center the voting power in the cities? Very few commentators will tell you that the heart of liberalism in America today is based on race. It permeates almost every issue. That white men have set up a system of oppression. That system must be destroyed.
No, not destroyed, dumbass. Modified. So that other people can participate in the American dream, too. Because the thing is, what Bill O'Reilly will not tell Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers is that the Electoral College from its very inception was designed to protect slavery. But Emery and Marvelline, they'd probably have to snort another line of nitroglycerin or something if he told them that. Yeah, I know. I'm equally baffled, Gerald. Gerald says, I'd really like to know how that fucker stays on the air. Because money. Because Emery and Marvelline tune in. And then they call the number on the Buy Gold Now ads. That's how.
Bernie Sanders peddled that. To some extent, Hillary Clinton did. And the liberal media tries to sell that all day long. So-called white privilege, bad. Diversity, good.
And now he's on a casting call for a bad Frankenstein movie? White privilege, bad. Diversity, good. Fire, bad. I was about to make espresso. White privilege is bad. Because white privilege is the essence. It's footers. It's the dug footers upon which inequality in this country is based. But you know that. But again, Christmas is coming, and I dare say that there are no small number of people who will be sharing Christmas dinner with crazy old Uncle Fox there at the Christmas dinner table, who will, without any prompting whatsoever, begin talking, goading, baiting, whoever the known liberal victim is, about how good it's going to be when America's great again, and how we got to, you know, all we're trying to do is make sure that white people is important here as well. It's awfully hard to ignore that kind of foolish horse shit when it's being thrown in your face. At a time, and see, they do this at the holiday dinner table because they know that you, as a decent human being, will not want to respond as they so richly deserve. They know that you won't want to get up and simply walk away from the holiday dinner table. And so they do this. So maybe, you know, a little short bumper sticker stuff. White privilege is the foundation of inequality in America. The Electoral College was designed for the sake of slave owners. And then you can just, you know, watch crazy old Uncle Fox bluster and scream and start dribbling cream corn out of the corners of his mouth.
If you look at the voting patterns, it's clear that the Democrats are heavily reliant on the minority vote, also on the woman vote.
The woman vote. The woman. That woman. A woman. Not women. Y'all don't even get to be plural in Bill O'Reilly's white world. And, you know, you could make an argument that really, even the white women, y'all ain't that white. because white comes with privilege. And Bill don't think much of y'all having many of them. Unless it's the privilege to stand still and be lovingly rubbed with his falafel.
Men have largely abandoned the Democrats. And the left believes this is because of racism.
Yeah, white men have largely abandoned the Democrats. I know lots of white men that haven't abandoned the Democrats. Me being one. But then again, I'm probably not that white to Bill O'Reilly either. And not much of a man. Because I won't vote and didn't vote for an orange-skinned misanthrope, misogynist, sexual assault perpetrator. Because that's how you define manhood in Trump America. The angry Indian, in almost Zen simplicity, noting, fuck him! And the fuckheaded conservatives who listen in to him for tips.
That they want to punish minorities, keep them down. So that's what's really going on when you hear about the Electoral College and how unfair it allegedly is.
I think we can do without the allegedly, because, fair, unfair... How about undemocratic? Because there's no way you can argue. Hamilton himself didn't argue that it was a democratic process. James Madison himself argued that it was, in fact, anti-democratic. James Madison compromised to include the Electoral College. Once again, just as with the Three-Fifths Compromise, so as to bring along the slave states and get them to cooperate in ratifying the new Constitution, which they would not have done had they not been given special privileges and dispensations and cookies. But Emery and Marveline don't watch anything that would ever, ever challenge their biases.
Summing up, left wants power taken away from the white establishment. They want a profound change in the way America is run. Taking voting power away from the white precincts is the quickest way to do that. That's a memo.
And yet, no one wants to take away anybody's vote on the Democratic side. Those weren't Democratic majority state legislatures that passed voter ID laws. Those weren't Democratic majority state legislatures that engaged in all manner of voter suppression activities. That wasn't a Democratic legislature in Texas that said that a person's VA, a veteran's VA voter ID was not sufficient as ID at the polls. That wasn't a Democratic majority legislature in Wisconsin that set it up so that a survivor from Pearl Harbor who was a white guy couldn't vote. Those were Republicans. And I'm kind of angry on this one. Fuck them. Right? So here we are at a minute before the hour, and I want to thank everybody who has jumped in on fundraising in this first hour. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Judith for answering Ace's challenge. Thank you very much indeed. And let's get all the thank yous out there. Thank you to Don in Central PA. You did something very, very huge, and you wiped out the biggest part of the fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you to Rob, who also answered Ace's challenge. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you to Robert in Australia, who said, no one should have money worries over Festivus. I'd like a few someones to match this $100 with $100 U.S. And for me here in Oz, it's Australian dollars, 150. So thank you, Robert. Thank you. That is a mighty Festivus feat of strength. And in fact, that $100 was matched by Bob in Texas, who said, please make my $100 a dollar-for-dollar matching challenge going forward. So there's a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Bob. And between Robert and Bob, that's enough to finish everything off, and then some. So hopefully someone else will match Bob's $100. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you all. This takes a little bit of the sweat out of finishing the week. A lot of the sweat out of finishing the week. Those $465 holes get worrisome. They really do. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. Subject line, Rockettes. And with any luck, as Trump walks by and reviews them in their precision lineup, the Rockettes quickly form into a circle and kick him in his orange head. I don't think you're allowed to say that, Scott. Shh. Clarence, who got us started this evening, said, subject line, the inauguration show, the Rockettes. I guess we'll see Lawrence Welk and Mitch Miller on a jumbo screen. Well, zombie Lawrence Welk and zombie Mitch Miller, maybe, Clarence. Jesus. Ron and Raleigh, who is helping me out with the art of word knowing tonight, he said, I think that's Obergruppenfuhrer, Bob. They had all kinds of Gruppenfuhrers that get so confused so easily. Then Michael in Madison says, Billo would probably approve this tweet. A tweet coming from America's neo-Nazi darling, Richard Spencer. Trump's ascension was, despite it all, a reassertion of masculinity in a post-masculine world. Yeah, because a guy who uses Pepe the Frog as his avatar on Twitter, by God, that's masculine! Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Robert in Australia pointed out that the little skeevy freedom girls are suing him for not paying them for performing at one of his rallies. Robert continues and says, I'm happy to lend Post, remember that stands for piece of shit Trump, I'm happy to lend Post my old vinyl LP player. He could put it on the stage and play Darth Vader's theme over and over and over. Me, I'd prefer that it... Wouldn't it be great to see him replicate the Andy Kaufman bit? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This whole thing's an Andy Kaufman skit. Remember when Andy Kaufman put the record on and lip-synced the Mighty Mouse theme? Remember the wrestling stuff? Andy may not be dead. Has anybody pondered that? I can't help wondering. I mean, Donald Trump is the kind of character Andy Kaufman would have created, isn't he? Wow. Well, I tell you what, let's take a break. Because we're here at the end of the filibobster. And if you want, we can engage in some conversation radio. I'm certainly game for it. You know how to reach the program. For some people, the stress line works. For some other, for others, it doesn't. 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. The other number, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And then Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. I'm going to deviate from my holiday music tradition for this bumper. This is listener-supported conversation radio, $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Bob in Texas. We will be right back.
A little ghost for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the
It's Thursday, December 22nd, 2016.
President Obama is trying to secure his environmental legacy.
Obama bans offshore drilling in large parts of the Arctic and the Atlantic.
Man-made change is the cause.
NOAA confirms climate change turbocharged 24 extreme events last year. New poll shows majority of Trump voters support regulating carbon emissions. Plus, what Trump can't change. Solar energy, now the cheapest energy in the world.
Oh, he'll figure out how to screw it up. All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, the environment's one of these issues the American people don't really want to talk about.
Really? Are you sure about that, Joe Scarborough? Or is it just a self-fulfilling prophecy? Think about that during your next commercial break, sponsored by ExxonMobil. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, before you get to your news, it's happening again for the second year in a row in late December. The temperatures in the Arctic will be freakishly high, 40 to 50 degrees warmer than normal. Approaching the 32 degrees, which is the melting point for ice. This is just insane. But, you know, Joe Scarborough thinks Americans don't want to talk about it.
Well, something else Scarborough probably doesn't want to talk about. 2016 is likely to go down in history as the hottest year on record globally, almost certain. The numbers won't be in until mid-January, but it marks the third year in a row that global temperatures have hit the hottest year on record since record-keeping began in the 1880s.
Did I mention it was 40 to 50 degrees warmer than normal in the Arctic?
Yes, I think you did. Another clear signal of man-made global warming caused by burning fossil fuels. And another signal, a new report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, confirms that global warming turbocharged at least 24 out of 30 extreme weather events around the world in 2015, showing measurable and detectable influences of climate change. That's according to NOAA scientist James Partain here in an interview with Alaska Public Radio.
In this paper that we developed, it shows unequivocally that man-made change is the cause of why 2015 was such a serious event.
Shut up. Americans don't want to talk about it.
Well, among some of those events that were amplified by global warming were the record 2015 typhoon season in the Pacific, Alaska's record-breaking wildfire season, sunny day flooding in Miami, and more catastrophic rain and flooding events around the world.
La, 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 la. I can't hear you.
Meanwhile, a new U.S. poll finds that a majority of Trump voters support climate action.
What?
The first post-election poll by Morning Consult found that 61% of Trump voters believe that the government should cut the nation's carbon emissions using regulations. 55% support maintaining current policies to combat climate change, and 76% support increasing energy efficiency standards for appliances.
They just don't want to talk about it or vote on it.
In a last-minute gift to the planet, President Obama has issued a permanent ban on offshore drilling in U.S. waters in the Arctic and off the Atlantic coast. The move preserves millions of acres of pristine marine habitat in both regions that are crucial to the ocean food web, and it's under the authority of an obscure provision in the 1953 Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. The ban is not entirely Trump-proof, but overturning it will be difficult and time-consuming for the incoming Trump administration. In his final press conference of 2016, President Obama highlighted just some of the climate, energy, and environmental successes of his presidency.
We've cut our dependence on foreign oil by more than half. Doubled production of renewable energy. None of these actions stifled growth, as critics predicted. Instead, the stock market has nearly tripled. Through diplomacy, we brought nearly 200 nations together around a climate agreement that could very well save this planet for our kids.
Braggart.
Much of Obama's environment and climate agenda can be unwound by Republicans and the incoming Trump administration, but there's something they can't change. Renewable energy has now outpaced fossil fuel energy, and solar energy is now the cheapest form of energy in the world. That's according to a new analysis from Bloomberg Energy, which found that in China, India, Brazil, and more than 50 other developing countries, the cost of solar energy energy since 2010 has dropped by more than 60%, making solar cheaper even than wind, and especially coal and natural gas.
Well, that news is a good holiday present indeed. For much more on that and all of the other stories we covered and couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We'll be taking a few days off for the holidays. We will see you after the new year. My thanks to all of those who support what we do here by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. It is greatly appreciated, more than you can ever know. Thank you. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. Happy holidays to you and yours. We'll see you in 2017. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your year-end Green News Report.
Everything's gonna be all right.
Oh, nice song choice, Brad and Desi. I kind of wish I could more fully subscribe to the idea that everything's going to be all right, but I appreciate the sentiment at a sentimental time of the year. This is the horn for the 22nd day of December, 2016. It's about 17 minutes past the hour. Going right over to the phones in just a second here, but a couple of things real quick. Brad and Desi mentioned the Arctic drilling and, you know, Atlantic seaboard drilling ban, and that was pretty impressive. And yes, it's going to be, I think the thinking is on that from a legal standpoint, it's going to be one of those little Chinese finger puzzles. Wouldn't you love to see Donald Trump trying to work one of those, you know, the little finger handcuffs? It would be delightful. Don, try this. Yeah. Anybody can get out of it, Don. Go. Yeah, I'm sure you'll be. And then just watch him go from orange to red to purple, and that'd be a beautiful thing. Thanks going out. Thank you very kindly to Nydia and to Michael, who said, here's hoping that we can have a Festivus miracle. And thanks to Nydia and Michael, we're only $17 away from meeting Bob in Texas's $100 challenge. Don from Central PA, who did a whole bunch of heavy lifting on the fundraising deficit this evening. Don said, I had a good month. A dentist appointment with no problems. An eye exam with no problems other than the cataract that's years down the road. I got one of those. So I had some extra disposable income for the month. I listened to the Tuesday broadcast for a second time today. The Jesus, This is Jimmy section was a classic. I laughed. I cried. I cried because I was laughing so hard. Signed, Don from Central PA. Thanks, Don. Thank you very, very much indeed. Thank you so much. One other thing, well, a couple of things. One, a note coming in, and this was in the stacks, but let's get to it now. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. They just can't be trusted, is the subject line. The Republican legislature here in Raleigh promised to repeal HB 2, the potty bill, if the city of Charlotte repealed its anti-discrimination ordinance. Well, guess what? Charlotte repealed the ordinance and meeting in special session to make good on their promise. They failed to repeal the law, the Republicans did, swearing that because the Democrats wouldn't go along with their compromise bill, which included a six-month cooling-off period where no locality could pass a non-discrimination bill. They also said the Charlotte City Council might pass the ordinance again. What a bunch of mendacious sons of bitches. Well, you're feeling rather genteel toward them this evening, aren't you, Ron? Because I can think of a lot of other things. They wouldn't do what they said they would do, which was to repeal HB 2. So here's hoping that, you know, the economic impacts on the state of North Carolina continue. Because apparently Republicans can hear only through their wallets. Which, of course, sit on their asses. So, North Carolina Republicans hear only through their asses. And this as well. Like I said, Brad and Desi mentioned the drilling moratorium, which will be like one of those Chinese finger puzzles for the Trump administration. They're going to be busy for a very long time trying to figure their way out of that one. Well, there's another one they're going to be a long time figuring out. Recently, Benito Chito said, you know what my position is, when asked about his Muslim registry. Well, according to a release from the Department of Homeland Security today, on order from President Obama, who really is a cool customer. I mean, I know there are times that you and I would like for him to go and just go full on Key and Peele anger translator on, and then we think it would be really fun, because it would. But instead, he stays cool. He stays Vulcan. And so today, the Department of Homeland Security announced that they were completely dismantling and breaking into a million tiny, unrebuildable pieces the last remnants of the so-called NSEER program, the National Security Entry Exit Registration System. Because if that little bit of infrastructure had remained, it would have been the core around which the Benito Chito administration built its Muslim registry. Well, that won't happen now. I mean, it may happen, but they're going to be very, very damned busy trying to put it back together. Because governmenting is hard. And it might be worth remembering that one of the original architects of that miserable program under Dim Leader was, yes, Kris Kobach. He's everywhere. But they'll have to seriously bust their ass to try. They'll have to rebuild it from ground up. In all the time that the NSEERS program was operating, you might find it interesting to note that not one single individual, not even a lone person, nobody was ever found to have any links to any terrorist or any violent activities. Not one. Of course, that's just another fact that they won't be broadcasting over there on Fox News for Emery and Marvelline to consume on their in their matching Barca loungers. All right, over to the Skype line where Laurel has been waiting patiently up in Minnesota. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
I'm good. How's Little Thunder?
He's keeping me busy as always. He's growing as we speak.
So, being who and what he is, does he love romping in the white filth when it falls, especially deeply?
Oh yeah. I could let him go for hours, and he would be every bit as thrilled when he came back as he was when I left him.
With a coat like that breed has, it may be the only time of the year that they actually cool off. There is nothing sadder. There's nothing sadder than a husky or a malamute in July in warm warm climes, because you just look at them and go, you got to be miserable.
Oh, and trust me, last July when I first brought him home, I was shampooing the walls. I mean, there was just hair everywhere. It was just insane. And then I can't imagine our summer's going to get any cooler. I was hearing the Green News report during the break while I was waiting for your call and hearing Brad talk about the freakishly warm Arctic. So I just quick pull up my little global temperature app and was just going around up north checking temperatures. And in the heart of Greenland right now, it's something like 67 below right now, which is pretty frigid. It was wind chill's almost that cold this time that last weekend. You know, we got down to about 55 below on the wind chill, but it was 67. It's 67 right now below in the heart of Greenland. So what I did, I just took the cursor up and dragged it up as far north as I could go to the very top of the map, which, you know, I'm presuming is the North Pole, and I got a reading of 28 above. At the North Pole right now, it's 95 degrees warmer than the heart of Greenland.
And it's 50 degrees warmer than normal.
That's insane. It goes into the last part of my PowerPoint presentation without the PowerPoint that I threatened you with last night. So I figured I might as well get that underway. But hopefully I'll try and, you know, order this to the point where it doesn't sound so much like prose. There's not a lot of reading involved, just a lot of scribble.
Well, I don't know if I can stand it if you do it in couplets, Laurel. So yeah. prose is fine.
All right. Well, basically,
and for Christ's sakes, don't do it in limerick form.
Oh God, no. That once was a man from Nantucket.
Yeah, there once was a young woman from Dallas too, but we'll leave that alone as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, basically, I've broken it down to what I truly think is going to happen. I understand the perils of humans practicing prognostication. I see it every night working the casino games when I'm on the roulette wheel. Everyone is, you know, someone never fails, bounds to ask me, you know, what number's going to come up as soon as I spin the ball around. And I said, I'll tell you that as soon as I retire to Cabo with my lottery winnings. So, granted, we are dealing with a very dynamic, you know, dynamic process. I'm not going to be able to set in stone everything that is coming, but given what I know generally about the world around us, I mean, it's not like I haven't been paying attention. I'd like to think that I've done a pretty good job of, you know, self-educating myself, and, you know, even if I don't have the, you know, social skills necessary to do fancy, you know, fancy presentations or great speeches, I just basically tried to cobble together what I know from what I see in the world around me and from all the books I've written, and hopefully I can paste it together in some form that's manageable. But I mentioned to you in the Skype post that I put down last night that Sarah Palin is famous for saying that she can see Russia from her house. Well, I truly believe that I can see the end of mine. I've got a fairly good idea of how this is going to play out. My presentation is straightforward. Fascism in America, a global tragedy in three acts. Okay. Now, granted, I can't exactly predict how it's going to happen, but I'm basing my, again, prognostication based on the three events that I feel are going to be most likely to shape how fascism in America ultimately plays out. And it's probably not for the optimist. It's not something I see it well, but for starters, you know, let's just take a look at the landscape right now. We've got a banking system in this country that is full blown out of control. It's something that would have been hard to manage even if Bernie Sanders had somehow gotten in. It would have been almost impossible to avoid a total meltdown under Hillary's watch. And with Trump in, it's pretty much a given that the first act of this tragedy is going to be the total collapse of our big banking system. Given the fact that you take away this hyperinflated $2 quadrillion derivatives market, our global economy, and in real numbers, our global economy has probably been in free fall since at least the bust of 2008, if not further back to maybe peak oil in 2005. We're dealing with an economy that is fundamentally flammable under the best of conditions. And this is the point where you're really going to start noticing a difference between, you know, what do I want to call it? Oppression under the normal traditional style and fascism oppression. You're going to see these Occupy Wall Street movements and 99% Wall Street movements that pop up after this following collapse, begin to really feel the mood heal first. You're going to start seeing crackdowns that are going to be literally mind-numbing. This is the first time that, you know, your common everyday American is going to experience real fear. Now, I'm not talking about the minority community, people who have been normally oppressed for generations, but I'm talking about, you know, your middle class, your middle of the road, you know, your people who show up to the Occupy Wall Street protests with the kid in the carriage and everything. You're going to start seeing events that are truly frightening. Instead of just rounding up people at an intersection and spray gas or tear gassing them or tasing them, people are going to start seeing their friends loaded into white vans, hauled off, and they're never going to see them again. You're going to start seeing posters come up here and there with 30 or 40 pictures of people like the Argentines did. They're just disappeared.
Well okay. Hold on, Laurel. I understand that that's your fear. But in order for that to happen, there's going to have to be a complete abrogation of every constitutional protection of the accused and of the general public. How are they going to get around the Bill of Rights? How are they going to get around? Granted, the Fourth Amendment's on life support. I understand that, but there are still certain requirements that, you know, formalities that have to be met in order for people to be simply disappeared in the dark and still of the night, in a sort of Stalin-esque style. Something big is going to have to happen to get rid of our constitutional protections. What is that?
The big bank collapse. We're going to completely lose our global. We're going to completely lose our economic system. Okay, that's going to shatter basically every societal and legal norm we have. I mean, think about it. We've got what are we going to do when this $2 quadrillion derivatives market gets called in? The entire global economy couldn't cover that, even if there were 20.
But that's not going. I mean, just an economic collapse is not going to cause a collapse of the of constitutional rights and remedies. Those will have to be actively abrogated. Now, are you suggesting that you think the Congress will meet and actually pass in a very, very complicated process amendments that will then have to be ratified by the states that will get rid of one's right to be, right to habeas corpus, the right to confront to confront accusers, the right to a trial by jury, the right against self-incrimination. Because that's what'll have to happen. I mean, even though he's a tiny fingered monstrosity, the man who, and we've got a new name for him, by the way, Kitty in Boston, who just finished off Bob in Texas's challenge. Thank you, Kitty. Calls him Schmuck a l'Orange, which I think is beautiful, and gave me a good giggle. He can't just snap his tiny fingers and make the Bill of Rights go away. Even if there's an economic collapse. I mean, we had a global economic collapse in the late 20s and early 30s, and it still didn't make our constitutional rights disappear.
But here's where I kind of get into Chris Hedges' territory. He likens what's going on now to the mafia state. And when you look back at fascism in Europe, there was quite a bit of a mafia-style quality leadership to it. People like to think that the Germans wrote everything down and kept meticulous records of everything. But there was a lot of policy decisions that were simply word-of-mouth decisions. Nothing was ever written down. You know, the word just came down from high, and people acted on it. And surprisingly enough, it wasn't being challenged in public. Now, granted, I know there's going to be a certain degree of blowback, and there's going to be, the second act of my play is basically titled Blowback. You know, it's not just the Occupy Wall Street movement that's going to get cracked down on. It's not just your other social justice warrior movements that are going to crack down. This is going to broaden out to the more general community, you know, people who are public liberals, people who are publicly criticizing of Trump are going to start feeling more pressure. You're going to start seeing more goon calls. You know, we know where you live, pictures of your houses and stuff. And it's especially going to get harsher on people like Muslims. And which leads me to the second part of my tragedy, which is blowback. You know, given the likelihood that the fascists in America are going to capitalize on such an attack, and given how senseless Trump is in terms of, you know, intelligence reports, it's very likely that within 1 or 2 years after this banking collapse, there's going to be a major attack somewhere in America that the fascists, if they haven't done so already, will use as their Reichstag moment to basically shut down the process. And if it doesn't happen before the banking collapse, it sure as heck will happen after this, you know, blowback occurs. And you know, it may seem strange to me. You know, it may seem strange when I talk about, you know, opening of camps and mass deportations or mass killings, but you have to understand we're talking about events that are going to shake us to our very core. I mean, none of us have ever experienced a massive financial meltdown. Okay. It's really hard to try and piece just what goes on in the human psyche when you're actually experiencing those things.
Are you seeing anything, and I'm not asking you to divulge any sensitive information, but are you seeing a slowdown in people coming to the tables or anything?
It's been a long time since I've seen many of my Muslim friends. It's been a couple of months.
They're not supposed to gamble in the first place.
No, exactly. But there are some regulars that I haven't seen nearly as often. But
I mean, I read not too long back that revenues for like the West Virginia lottery are down because we're in the middle of an economic meltdown here in this state. And so people don't have money to gamble with.
The dream out here. Yeah. Well, people are still chasing the dream out here in the prairie. I mean, you know, it's not that we're necessarily hurting for business, you know, given the fact that, you know, it's getting harder and harder to make an honest living. You know, the allure of a quick buck is going to be there. Like I said, there's so many casinos that just weren't here 5 or 10 years ago that are springing up all over the place. And that's a sign that, you know, we've got a real global economy, a real economy that is contracting and contracting quite badly. But trying to get back to my point here.
Yeah, go ahead.
My presentation here. You know, after this first major attack, whatever it is, it may be something smaller than San Bernardino. It may be something larger than 9/11. Again, I'm not going to get that fine-tuned prediction. But as opportunistic as fascists generally are, you're going to see your first open, you know, first real outlawing of open criticism. You're going to see your first real internet censorship movements. You're going to see, you know, the real big restrictions on mass media begin to kick in. And you just mentioned it earlier, you know, speaking of China style censorship of the internet, you just mentioned here where Trump is starting to amp up his nuclear arsenal regime. You know, I'm sure, you know, that's not going to go over too well in places like China or Russia. You know, he just announced a trade secretary that wants open trade war with China. I can't imagine how that's going to end well for anybody. But, this is something that is terrifying. It goes back to the premise that, you know, civilization as it's structured is fundamentally unsustainable. I mean, you can't have infinite growth on a finite planet with finite resources. You can't continue to, you know, blow through a resource like fossil fuels that, if it doesn't poison us before it runs out, will starve us to death when it does. And it gets down to the point of, we know that there's a major population contraction coming sometime in the relatively near future, where, and this is before I get into this third act, my third act is basically Mother Nature's taking the show over from there. We're talking about global agricultural collapse, but
nature bats last.
I want to take a little bit of, yeah, exactly. I want to take a little bit of a side note here and focus on basically on resistance. And there was a word that I mentioned to you earlier in a post that was acclimation. You know, acclimation instead of normalization, where I might not like the fact that it gets down to 50 below with a wind chill in Minnesota. It doesn't mean I walk out in shorts and a t-shirt. I have to be able to acclimate myself in order to be able to function, in order to be able to go to work, in order to be able to keep the lights on, you know, in order to be able to not get sick. There's going to be a certain amount of acclimation that is going to be necessary for people to function when violence inevitably comes. Starving people are not peaceful people, Bob. Yes, there are a great many who will simply lay down and die. a great many more of them won't, especially in places like America where the people are outnumbered by guns. And I want to mention this need for acclimation for one simple reason. Even if you or I have complete moral objections to acts of violence, even if we view picking up a weapon as an act of surrender or defeat, we still have got to understand that we are going to be witness to acts of extreme violence as civilization winds down. That's a given. And if I or you or anyone that's listening right now wants to be able to be in a position where they can care for their loved ones or save their loved ones in a time of need, it would really be best if we weren't curled up in the fetal position going because we couldn't handle what we'd just seen. I spend, Bob, a good 5, 6, 7 hours a week, roughly an hour a day, doing nothing but watching violent clips, either from Syria or from Iraq, watching violent road accident scenes, volunteering for roadkill cleanup during the summer. And I do that as a direct need to acclimate myself to what is coming. This is not some psychopathic urge to want to be around violence. But I know that as this great experiment winds down, there's going to be violence up to our armpits. And I don't want my loved ones to be left in the lurch because mentally I've shut down. And that need, that desire to shut down is going to be very strong with all of us. And to get into this, you know, this third act, once anthropogenic climate change begins to shred our global, you know, our agricultural collapse like a cheap tent in a hurricane, it doesn't matter whether or not the people in power are fascists or not. You know, it doesn't help that the person in power right now is going to be a fascist. It doesn't help that the people in power now are going to make damn sure that the right people eat and the right people starve. But when you've got somebody who has to be told 3 or 4 or 5 times in an intelligence meeting that using nukes would be a bad idea and just says today that they need to ramp up that nuclear arsenal, we're going to be looking at acts of violence that we can't even begin to imagine. I don't mean to sound overly dreadful, but this set of living arrangement, this is something that simply can't continue. It's not fundamentally designed to continue. And
well, let's take a moment and understand that the way human beings live now, especially in the so-called developed world, is not how human beings were meant evolutionarily to live.
No,
we don't thrive when we become broadly separated from one another. We don't do well when we are away from what Van Morrison referred to as our own ones. But that's exactly the model that we live on. I mean, there was in the post World War II era a deliberate depopulating. Of places like Appalachia. You can read about it. You can read about it in Joe Bajant's book, Rainbow Pie. He delineates it very, very clearly. We are pack animals. We are meant to live in groups because we don't fare well on our own. There's no such thing as the successful lone wolf. And so some of that may just be you may be right. A correction may be due. And of course, going all the way back to Malthus in the 18th or the 19th century? I think it was the 19th, that he predicted, you know, we would just reach a tipping point and there would be a big die-off. Think about the Rosicrucians who put up the Guidestones in Georgia. Simple basic rules to live by. Remember those guys? Ever heard about those?
I believe I have, yeah.
So, you know, that's... Yeah.
But, yeah, the problem is, I don't think people realize just how fast this thing is going to onset. And it all comes back to the exponential function. I mean, this 90-degree difference in air temperature between Greenland and the North Pole, essentially, we're talking about exponential change of that order. And think of it as the simple experiment where you've got some rice and a chessboard. You place one grain of rice on the first square of the chessboard. You place two grains of rice on the second square. On the third square, you'll double that and place four grains of rice. On the fourth square, you'll double that, and you've got 16, and on and on. And by the end of the first row, you've got 64. You know, on the next square, you put 128, 256, and so on. And by the time you get down to the first 64, you're basically plopping down the entire rice harvest of Asia. You know, we don't seem to realize just how fast these changes can take place. I'm not just pulling figures out of my behind when I say it's very likely that within 10 years, our numbers will have been reduced by at least 90%. And by 2030, we may be only dealing with 100 million, if not a complete extinction. Now, again, I'm not saying we're going to go extinct. I'm not saying we deserve to go extinct. God, I hope there is something that we can salvage from this. Okay. But it better be something substantial, because even those who are blessed enough to survive this, they're not going to merge out the other side psychologically whole. This is something that is going to leave, if we survive this, a millennia's long legacy. And even if you or I don't survive this, it's damn important that our ideals do. It's damn important for us to get through the message that we treat one another with respect, that we are our brother's keeper, that we shelter those who are cold, that we feed those who are hungry, that we take care of those who are sick. And it's important that we pass that message on to as many people as we can, even if it seems like we're alone in a wilderness right now, even though we're staring at the abyss and may actually be falling into it right now. It's important that those ideals get into the heads of as many people as possible, because that is ultimately what humanity 2.0 is going to be rebuilt from. It's got to be those ideals. If we exist for any reason at all, it's got to be for that. Even if none of this happens, and thank God if I'm proven wrong. Even if none of this happens, we still need to make sure that those essential ideals pass on. Because that's the essence of humanity. You know, even if modern civilization is just one great big lie, even if anywhere you scratch that surface of civilization, you'll find the Dark Ages staring at you from right back at you from underneath. Even if those situations are the case, we still need to hold strong to these ideals, because that's all we have, that and each other. You know, it comes back to what Guy McPherson said at Leech Bats Last. When at the edge of extinction, only love remains. That's what we've got right now. And that's what we need to impress upon everyone we meet. You know, friend and foe alike. So I hope I didn't, you know, take it down too dark a path here. But, you know, I know that this is something I've needed to get off my chest for quite a long time.
Oh, I think about this stuff quite a bit, really. And I wonder what it looks like, because, as I've said for years, when an empire collapses, it's not like they put up a blinking neon light that says "Empire falling, everything must go." Cheap.
Yeah.
We live in the eddies and flows of history. It is the idea of past, present, and future are human constructs. As compared to, you know, the idea of simply being. These things bedevil thinkers. They drove Kurt Vonnegut to the notion of coming up with the Tralfamadorians as a way of explaining it, because they experience time the same way we experience the other senses. And so they laughed at us mere humans for thinking that we were living finite lives, because we were living the same life. They saw our lives as something that was, you know, circular as opposed to linear, I guess, would be a way of putting it.
Well, speaking of trial famidorians, I recently had to have my plunger replaced because LT just chewed mine up for some reason. I don't know why you'd find that tasty. I can't imagine why, but dog, I'll never.
Well, okay, wait. Now, I can explain this. I can explain this. Where do you use a plunger? Okay. Yeah, okay. And what sense does the plunger get on it? Yeah, and dogs are fascinated with the smell of other poo.
It wasn't just so bad that he chewed the darn thing up. He left it in my bed, Bob. Oh, my God.
Well, that's love.
I know, but can't you find a more...
No, he's a dog.
No, he's a dog.
If you had a cat, it would bring you a gutted chipmunk and lay it on your pillow.
Yes, I have two cats, and they are slowly coming around to tolerating him. There's not a bean bone in that dog's body. He's just so precious. He wants to play with the cat so bad, and the cats just look at him and it's like, what on earth is this? And yes, the cats have left a rabbit head in my bed too. So. You know, I can understand.
Oh, you've got now. Oh, I see it. You've got mafia cats.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had the occasional rabbit head in bed with me once in a while. Of course, I grew up with a cat lady as my mom. I remember my mom used to just keep tons of cats when I was a kid. I used to actually, when I was a child, I'd keep charts of, you know, which cat was having litters and how many. And I filled up half a notebook over 9 years of cats and what litters they had and the names of each cat in the litter. It was just phenomenal, the amount of cats that we had. They weren't maltreated or misfed. You know,
it was like reading the first chapter of Matthew.
Yeah, the local CBS station out of Sioux Falls came in and did a feature on us. I'd just gotten home from college, so I got interviewed too. But, I mean, they were everywhere. And during the time, we had one dog this whole time. It was a black lab, great black lab. And they'd jumped all over him. He didn't care. It was part of the scenery to him.
Labs are delightful animals.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, it's good to at least try and, you know, get this off my chest, even if it sounds jumbled and everything. But, you know... You know, I know this is going to be an interesting time. You know, we've all been blessed or cursed to be born in these interesting times, and you know, let's try and get through this together as best we can. You know, so hopefully maybe I can send some positive vibes out to everybody who's probably on their third or fourth shot of Jack because of me. Sorry about that, but you know, this is something that's amazing about programming like this. I'm in the middle of doing dishes and laundry and housekeeping while your show cranks up, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, this guy's running a show from far away and I'm going to be right in the middle of it in about an hour and a half. That's
there you
cool.
go.
You know, it's
the magic of radio.
You know, we got to try and keep this up and running as long as we can. You know, funding, censorship issues are going to come in. I know this is not going to get any easier for any of us. But we got each other, and, you know, God willing, we can keep this going for a while longer, if only for another day, because this is something really special here.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Laurel. Hopefully a lot more than another day. But
all right. Yeah,
I appreciate the sentiment. You have yourself a good evening. Stay warm. Be acclimated. And you know...
Yes.
What would happen if they said, what's the next number, and you said 16, and they bet 16, and they lost? You lied! Yeah.
It happens 37 out of every 38 times. What can you do? The tips are nice, though, when I do call it right.
I never understood roulette. That's, you know, I remember when that guy with the one of the English banks... destroyed the bank because he was betting on Wall Street, And in essence, he went, red, no, black, no, red, oh, fuck. And the bank collapsed.
I remember during my salad days, during my younger and foolish days, I was down after a night of blackjack, $2,500. I was down to one black $100 chip, and I was walking out the door. The roulette table was the last thing between me and the exit, so I said, heck with it. I just plopped the black $100 chip on 11, and guess what? I left $1,000 up because I won $3,500 out of that one spin. So
it happens. That's why they call it gambling.
It happens. But trust me, it's a good thing I ain't.
Well, I saw a fascinating story earlier today talking about gambling. We've all seen the Bond movies, and we've all seen the Baccarat scene with Sean Connery, and there was a wonderful SNL skit that featured Steve Martin in the Bond gambling scene, Sting and Steve Martin. Baccarat, that's just. You know, it's luck based.
I never could figure out how to deal that game. We had to take the baccarat.
Tens and face cards are tens and face. Tens and face cards equal zero, and so the highest number the highest number you can get is nine.
Nine. I mean, I understand.
And it's not like blackjack. There's some skill involved, and if you play right, you can get close to even money odds with the house. Because, you know, the house is always supposed to win. I'm not telling you anything.
Oh, yeah.
The house always does win.
Best I can cut the edge down to is maybe about 0.4%, maybe, you know, 40 cents for every $100 played, you know, which isn't too bad. You know, you can make a decent evening out of that. But, no, it's something that, fortunately, I never caught the bug for.
Well, this professional poker player who had won millions playing poker started playing Baccarat, and he went into, I think, an MGM property in Atlantic City, and Baccarat there's all kinds of funny superstitions, and players want the card this way, that way. And he had a scheme. He knew a woman who had discovered aberrations in the edges of the decks that this casino played with. And she memorized those tiny, she must have had the tremendous visual acuity, and she memorized these edge schemes and sat down, and they sat down at the table, and dude won $10 million. And then, because they'd been tipped off by a London casino who refused to pay flat out, the casino in the U.S. sued him, and a judge ordered him to pay the money back, but did not say that he committed fraud. He simply unfairly tilted the odds in his favor. Because what they would do is, in Baccarat, you can ask the dealer, you know, well, turn the card this way, turn the card that way. And they always turned all the face cards and the tens in a different direction. So even though they were playing out of an 8-deck shoot, the shuffle didn't matter because the card orientation, the edges, remained the same regardless of the shuffle. So they sat there and beat the daylights out of the house, and the house sued, claiming that that scheme was unfair, and I guess there will probably be an appeal, but a federal judge said, nope, that was improper. That wasn't sporting.
Well, I'll tell you what, the most money in the last 10 years I've ever won at a casino in one night was $1,000 just in the last 10 years, not going back to my salad days, but just in the last 10 years, most money I ever won at a casino in one night is $1,000, which I won on winning a karaoke contest. And it was in one of these Indian casinos in South Dakota, and they gave me a nice little trophy. Actually, I can see it on my stand right now, where it said, you know, Royal River Riverfest $1,000 karaoke contest winner, and they misspelled the word karaoke.
Beautiful thing. Beautiful thing.
Four months later, I placed second in the same contest. Gave me a different trophy with a different month label. The word karaoke was still misspelled.
That's gorgeous. That's lovely. Well, Laurel, you have yourself a lovely evening and stay warm.
You too, Bob.
Go give LT a treat. He's a good boy. He's a nice puppy.
Yes, he's a good boy. He's been wonderfully quiet today.
Yeah, he didn't even speak up tonight. All right, Laurel, you take care, my friend.
LT, in there? All right, you take care too, Bob.
All right, later.
Have a good one.
Bye now. Laurel calling from southwestern Minnesota. So the lines are open now. If you want to get into the conversation, you are more than welcome. I've seen a couple of people call in the meantime presumably conversations to have. If you were trying earlier, I heartily welcome you to call back in. We'll take a little break right now. I am very, very happy to say that Bob in Texas's challenge got met. Thank you very, very much indeed. And like I said, Kitty in Boston sent a note along saying, I have a new name for plugs, Schmuck à l'Orange, which I think is just delightful. Merry Christmas, Bob, from Kitty in Boston. Merry Christmas, Kitty. Merry Christmas indeed. Happy holidays, one and all.
God bless us, everyone.
Right? Yeah. Let's see, like I said, we'll take a break. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. You're welcome to jump in at your leisure. And yesterday, having been the solstice, I ran across a really neat little tune by a band I'd never heard of, but I don't know, the lyrics felt appropriate to the solstice. So we'll fire this up, and in the meantime, if you want to jump into the conversation, you're more than welcome. And of course, email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. I don't mention that as often as I should. James pointed out via email, the brown shirts acted via mob rule with tacit approval of authorities. People look the other way when it's them or me. Unfortunately, there's a lot of truth in that, and it's happened in the United States as well. Les sent me a message on Skype and said, cops don't have to change the Constitution to take away the rights of black people to survive traffic stops. And that's absolutely true. But as difficult as it is for us to conceptualize it, those are brutality issues. They're not constitutional issues. You know, the Klan came and took away people in the night. For government entities to do that really would, to do it on the massive scale Laurel is talking about, would require some sort of constitutional action. Anyway, let's take a little break, and the name of this song is, like I said, I thought it appropriate to the solstice. The name of the song is Running to the Light by a group called, that I'd never heard of before, Runrig. Everybody else in the Horn family, oh yeah, Runrig, okay. Well, I hadn't heard of them before. Enjoy. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
everything. By the water, where the air is clear. Surrender everything. Old hearts grow younger again. They promise spring. The greenest plots are tender. They're full of sap and spring.
Running to the light. I saw it. I actually chased it down because it was an accompaniment to a video of somebody with a GoPro cam on their helmet riding a motorcycle. You know how the internet rabbit hole is. But that's why. What is this? photo coming from Rob in Minnesota. Stagehand Rob says, after all the sheep and camel poop I cleaned up on stage when the show was in Minneapolis, shame on the Rockettes. And it's a picture of an embroidered fleece with the Radio City Christmas Spectacular starring the Rockettes. There was sheep and camel poo? Ow. Ow. Wait a minute. Let's see. The word rice. Oh, that's what it was. Laurel was talking about rice a few minutes ago, and how you start with the chessboard and you get one, and then you put two, and then you put four, and you know the concept of compounding. Well, that reminded me of something I saw earlier today. Because capitalism. Courtesy of the BBC. Nigeria, I mean, the depths of perfidy of which capitalists are capable. Well, we should never be stunned by it, but we are just the same, because there's real creativity going on here. The most prominent food staple in Nigeria, the most favored food staple in Nigeria, is rice. And customs officials in Nigeria have confiscated 2.5 tons of, get this, plastic rice. I read that and I immediately thought again of Milo Minderbinder in Catch-22, Joseph Heller's satiric masterwork. Milo Minderbinder buys too much cotton, too much Egyptian cotton for M&M Enterprises, where everyone has a share. And he can't unload it, and it's killing him. So he dips some cotton balls in chocolate and tries to get Yossarian to eat it. No, it's cotton. Yeah, but I put chocolate on it. Well, it's still cotton. Well, I mean, won't you at least taste it? No. It's cotton. You can't eat cotton, Milo. Yeah, but I got to find some way to sell this. I'm overextended on cotton. Nigeria has confiscated 2.5 tons of plastic rice smuggled into the country by unscrupulous businessmen, according to the Customs Service. Lagos Customs Chief Haruna Mamudu said the fake rice was intended to be sold in markets during the festive season.
Why can't they say Christmas in Nigeria? See how far the war on Christmas done spread? They say festive season over there. That's because they ain't got Jesus.
Haruna Mamudu said the rice was sticky after it was boiled, and only God knows what would have happened if people ate it. It is not clear where the seized sacks came from, but rice made from plastic pellets was found in China last year. The BBC's Peter Okwoche says it is the only foodstuff that crosses cultural and ethnic lines across the country. Whoever made this fake rice did an exceptionally good job. On first impression, it would have fooled me. When I ran the grains through my fingers, nothing felt out of the ordinary, according to Martin Patience of the BBC News in Lagos. But when I smelt a handful of the rice, there was a faint chemical odor. Being the BBC, they spell that O-D-O-U-R, odour. Customs officials say when they cooked the rice, it was too sticky, and then it was abundantly clear it was no ordinary batch. They've sent a sample to the laboratories. See, because it's a BBC story, I have to say laboratories, because otherwise I'd say laboratories, to determine exactly what the rice is made of. They're also warning the public not to consume the mystery food stuff, as it could be dangerous. Here's the trick, though. How do you know there isn't another 2.5 tons of the stuff already in circulation? The BBC continues and says, fake food scandals are thankfully rare in Nigeria when you compare it to countries such as China. The big scandal here is fake pharmaceutical drugs that kill a huge number of people every year. Gee, I wonder why they have fake pharmaceutical problems in Nigeria. Could it be because they don't have a bunch of those job-killing regulations and any means of enforcing them? So that means that a country getting, say, 2.5 tons of fake rice brought into the country and killing hundreds of people annually with fake pharmaceuticals, well, hell, that's just freedom, because because regulations are un-American and job-killing. We'd rather have people, we'd rather have a country that has a lot of people killing and no regulations than be a country that has a lot of regulations and that are job killers. Oddly enough, when you kill a person can't do a job. Damnedest thing, that. Yeah, Arthur, maybe. Arthur says, it's like those really good plastic fruits that seem perfectly real until you handle them. Wow. Or until you try to take a big crispy bite out of a fake apple. Except rice. Food staple. The apple kind of gives itself away. But this stuff was designed to actually behave like rice. It was sticky like rice is sticky. Feed 'em! Right? Yeah. So we've got that going for us. Follow-up coming from Rob up in Minnesota. Yes, the Rockettes had a nativity scene in the show. Donkey poop, too. Live animals. Was it Fields who said, I don't want to work with kids or animals? I don't remember. Barkway with from the chat room with a question. Why do health insurers refuse to pay for doctor-recommended prescriptions, and then you wind up in the hospital and they get huge bills for which you, of course, get stuck paying a portion to meet deductibles, out-of-pocket max, and after-deductible coinsurance? Wouldn't it be cheaper for everyone if they just paid for the prescriptions that would have kept you out of the hospital? You would think, Barkway. But guess what? Somewhere in that pharmaceutical company, there's a CPA who has calculated the cost of not paying for those prescriptions out to the 10,000th decimal place and has figured out that if they don't do that, then the corporation will reap huge windfalls of money right now as opposed to paying money later. And money you have right now is better than money that you pay out later, because right now your money can be making interest. It could be making other little money. Charming, isn't it? Because capitalism. Because, see, that kind of thinking only works with, you know, capitalism. Odd that. Jen in Australia pointed out something to me, and I'm kind of fretful. We were all introduced to art from Congo, courtesy of Jen, the other night. Well, apparently art's in a bad way. She sent me a note and said, will this shitstorm of a year ever cut the crap? Arthur was taken away to emergency this afternoon, yesterday, following a seizure, and in a barely conscious state was nearly released. In other words, he had marginal consciousness, and the hospital was saying, here now, go home, take a couple of aspirin, call us in the morning. Crocodile Kincaid returns. Jen says, after my experience with this system nearly being killed after being released following clear symptoms of a deep vein thrombosis, I knew to engage firmly on his behalf and refuse anything other than him being taken into care. I don't know why I'm writing this, Jen says. Maybe because the last time I saw Art, he was listening to your program. He has a fondness for you. I just got home to an empty house following dinner with Jazz, his wife, and a day so hot. Remember, winter solstice here, summer solstice there, and a day so hot, one's skin felt singed as when opening a hot oven and taking a waft to the face. because climate change is a big Chinese hoax. Right? Anyway, Jen says, we fear the worst. Turns out we've both known people who died from a brain tumor. Very likely we could be fretting, but we compared notes the past few months. Arthur's been a bit odd, unusually agitated, even erratic, so unlike him, and having these sort of strange false memories and misperceptions. Nothing too weird, but still noticeable, such as he brought us a bushel of green tomatoes this morning. But he thought they were red and ripe. He left here after Titanic Tuesday, and not long after that, she rang, frantic. The scene at the hospital was nightmarish, to say the least. I wish they'd stop saying Merca is the only developed country that doesn't provide health care. Australia is a mixed bag with its public-private pretzel. It's strange. Those who are poor as church mice are very well looked after. However, if one has means, even minimal, the safety net becomes thin. Bed shortages and overpaid, underperforming staff led to them nearly killing me post-knee surgery. And when a friend from Germany came here to vacation and 2 weeks in rolled her car on a rough stretch of road, was very nearly left crippled when radiologists missed 3 fractures in her upper pelvis. Then last month, the son of a customer of ours was admitted with a severe flu and, despite wearing a Medic Alert bracelet, was injected with dangerous meds. Out of all this, Jen says, plugs, otherwise known as schmuck a l'orange. Thank you, Kitty. And the miscreant Republican Congress, Senate, want to repeal and replace? Oi! Loud and clear. Universal single payer is what their store brand Jesus would implement. Please, y'all, spare good vibes for Arthur. Thanks. Jen says, I've lost count of the number of times I've cried myself to sleep this year with 2017. Promising lather, rinse, repeat. Damn. And I sent a note to Jen asking her to update us on Arthur's condition, and she has not signed on. She's not signed on as yet. So I hope we'll be getting good news. Clarence tells me Nigeria is ground zero for fake schemes. How about those money-making, taking scams? Ah, yes, the Nigerian widow. True. It's apparently, but look, it's capitalism. It's a growth industry. You'll notice that the oil business is big in Nigeria too, and the oil they're not real choosy. The oil thugs aren't about going out and putting a bullet behind the ear of the occasional complaining local who doesn't want to be doesn't want her family and herself to be poisoned to death. And by putting it, I don't mean that they tape it behind her ear. I mean, it enters at about, 2,000 feet per second. Frank, with a note, wrong source product. If they wanted to use alternative material in lieu of plastic, they could use rubber, and that would help stretch the food budget. Ah! I see what you did there. Stretch the food budget. That's pretty evil, Frank. but really. Fake news, fake rice. One wonders what's real. But then again, if you complain about fake news, there's always somebody else going, yeah, but Hillary, goddammit, Goldman Sachs, Clinton's, yes, sir. And I don't know why we can't have the best of all possible worlds in this regard. We can say at one and the same time, they are not mutually exclusive. One does not have to disavow one to give credence to the other, that Hillary was a terrible candidate. And yet at the same time, we can also say, hey, look, turns out the Russians were monkeying around in propagandizing our election process, because our election processes are and mostly always have been fertile ground for propagandizing. You remember when Ronnie Reagan used to say, well, we don't negotiate with terrorists. But it turned out that Ronnie Reagan made sure that the hostages remained hostages longer than they had to be so that Jimmy Carter couldn't get the credit for having them released. And instead, in return, promised the mullahs there some missiles and stuff. Because I remember that.
Yeah, but goddamn Hillary! Oh, Jesus, the Iran deal!
That's the right-wing version. Yeah, I know. Well put. Well put. Randy in PA says, in regard to the fake rice story, that's why libertarianism doesn't work. You have to have a milk testing laboratory. Oh, wait, we're not talking about the BBC anymore. You have to have a milk testing laboratory in your basement. And, well, you could just trust the hand of the free market. The free market will correct things. Remember when Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, was running for Senate and Rachel Maddow interviewed him, and I would have voted against the Civil Rights Act because the market would have corrected all of that discrimination. I mean, people won't go to a restaurant that won't allow black folk at the lunch counter someday. Maybe, kind of, if the market doesn't like it. And those are the sorts of assholes that we're going to have running the government. So, a good point, Stockton Larry, in the chat room, noting, was the fake rice labeled Condoleezza? That's right, kind of sleazy rice goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. Well, let's go over and check in with Scott and Punky, shall we? Hey, Scott. Hey, Punky.
Hey, Bob. After my marathon performance the other day, which apparently went over well because it brought out the inner Jesus, this is Jimmy in you.
Well, and I mean, Don in PA went back and listened a second time. On the other hand, Matt in San Francisco conditioned a contribution last night on me swearing not to play it at all during 2017. So y'all better be on your best behavior because I don't want to have to send $50 back to Matt.
I heard that. Anyway, I hesitated to call, but nobody else has. So I figure... the fellow with the doggy up in Minnesota, I think.
Yeah, Laurel.
He said something that kind of made me think of something else that I had heard.
Isn't it amazing how that happens on this program?
Yeah. And he was great. I enjoyed that call immensely, as dark as it was. But it reminded me of two things. One of the things it reminded me of was a guy who told me about 10 years ago, maybe a little more, that given the way we operate here on Earth, you know, with the fossil fuels and the population explosion and all that, that the planet apparently, according to him, exceeded its carrying capacity back in 75 or 78, somewhere in there. And I forget what the population was. You figure it's in excess of 7 billion now. So in 75, 78, thereabouts, it was probably a third less, maybe half less. Somebody can look that up.
Yeah, but you're probably close.
But he said basically that was the tipping point. If anything was going to be done about living the way we've been living with fossil fuels and unthinking procreation, that the time to have done it was back then. And then something else that Laurel was saying made me think about something else that someone had said, that basically it's going to be like if you saw the movie Doctor Strangelove, which I'm sure you're a huge fan of.
Yeah, seared into my brain.
The good doctor in his little wheelchair and
animals can be bred and slaughtered.
Yeah.
His mechanical hand and the rest of it. was talking about the fallback position for America, given the existence of the Soviet doomsday device, which would automatically trigger universal bereavement from just megaton upon megaton of nuclear device being exploded all at once, thereby eliminating life. Well, Dr. Strangelove said, let's go down to some of our deepest coal mine shafts and build up a fortress of sorts, whereupon a selective group of people can go down there and survive until things are safe to come up out of the coal mine shaft.
Mr. Okay. President, we cannot afford a mine shaft gap.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So then there was a little dialogue in the movie about, well, how do we pick the people who get to survive? Okay. Well, that's where we are now. If what Laurel is saying is going to come to pass, and they haven't done anything since the mid-70s or late-70s to put on the brakes, so to speak, you have to know that they have spent that time, since, according to my friend, there was nothing else to do anyway, in developing our version, our appropriate version for this scenario, a coal mine shaft fortress. So you can bet that the elite, and there are two types of elite. There's the phony elite that the right wing always harangues about, and there's the actual elite, the movers.
You mean the smart people?
Yeah,
no. We're talking about the people with all the money. And just so people can know what we're talking about, I managed to find the clip.
Okay.
From Dr. Strangelove. Because every time Dr. Strangelove speaks, it's hyper creepy. But that's what makes it so wonderful. So here we go.
I would guess that a dwelling space for several hundred thousand of our people could easily be provided.
Well, I would hate to have to decide who stays up and who goes down.
Well, it would not be necessary, Mr. President. Could easily be accomplished with a computer. And the computer could be set and programmed to accept factors from youth, health, sexual fertility, intelligence, and a cross-section of necessary skills. Of course, it would be absolutely vital that our top government and military men be included to foster and impart the required principles of leadership and tradition.
Hand goes up in alt-right salute.
Actually, they would breathe prodigiously, eh? There would be much time and little to do. But with the proper breeding techniques and a ratio of, say, 10 females to each male, I would guess that they could then work their way back to the present gross national product within, say, 20 years.
And I have to interrupt, Scott, just long enough to say, the look on General Buck Turgidson's face, who is throughout the movie, we understand that he's nothing but a horn dog.
Yeah.
You stay right there, honey, and old Bucky will be back before you can say blast off. His eyes are big and twinkly, and his mouth is kind of open in a sort of dopey grin. What? 10 women? Buck likey.
Well, yeah, he's saying to himself, "Why the good doctor's on to something here."
Exactly, a little bit left.
But look here, doctor. Wouldn't this nucleus of survivors be so grief-stricken and anguished that they, envy the dead and not want to go on living?
No, sir. Excuse me.
Damned arm.
Also, when they go down into the mine, everyone would still be alive. There would be no shocking memories. And the prevailing motion will be one of nostalgia for those left behind, combined with a spirit of bold curiosity for the adventure ahead.
Biting the hand. Now the hand's trying to choke him.
Oh, God.
Bold curiosity for the adventure ahead? Yeah.
Is he okay?
Yeah. My Führer, yeah. I can walk!
I have seen that film so many times, and the reason I'm laughing as the audio is playing, I see it in my mind's eye, you know, because those images and that dialogue is burned into my head. But here's what I'm thinking. It could well be that it's not only too late, but it is well beyond too late, given the scenario that Laurel was describing. Perhaps the election of Donald Trump represents, like in an auto race, the big glorious starting flag that the race is on. And here comes death running up the backstretch, you know? It could very well be that they figured it was safe to let a manifest lunatic be in charge of things, because the elite, the real live, living, breathing elite, the folks, if you imagine the rest of us being pieces on a giant chessboard, okay, and there's a hand moving us around and causing global events to happen or not happen, well, that hand is attached to an arm, and that arm is attached to a person, and there are a handful of people who are, in fact, the ones who are literally calling the moves, making the moves, and calling the shots, okay? So, you know, here we go, boys and girls. We will be going down the tubes in rapid fashion, full tilt boogie, if my guess is correct. And if that doesn't cause a couple of parts of yourself to pucker, I don't know what will.
You know, you really do have to stop dragging out the old DJ in me. You did it again. The old possum, George Jones. You ever heard this one?
All right. I feel tears welling up, calling deep inside, like my heart's from a big brick. And the stab of loneliness, sharp and painful, that I may never shake. Now you might say that I was taking it hard since you wrote me off with a call. But don't you wager that I'll hide the sorrow when I'm here right down in bow. Now the race is on, and here comes pride up the backstretch. Heartaches are going to the inside. My tears are holding back. They're trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. True love scratched for another's sake. The race is on, and it looks like heartaches, and the winner loses all.
That's enough, but, you know, you said the race is on, and I was off and running.
Well, that, see, today's modern so-called country music, I wouldn't give you 10 cents for. But you give
but you can listen to that all day long, can't you, in part and into tomorrow.
That great country music from the 50s and 60s and into the 70s and maybe the early part of the 80s. Oh, that stuff is classic. That stuff is brilliant. That's poetry set to music with a little twang. But you remember also back in the 80s, all the radio stations got together, and at a certain time, they, I think it was that song, We Are the World, or one of those songs that was to raise money for some important charity. At a certain time, all the radio stations, regardless of format, played whatever that song was. Do you remember that?
We Are the World?
Was it We Are the World? I couldn't remember.
Do They Know It's Christmas? I think it was We Are the World.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was We Are the World, because it was rather, at the time I was living in Kansas City, and the biggest station in town was WDAF AM 61 Country, and nobody could beat them. Every station in the market tried, and none of us could beat them, okay? Because they had a killer signal, you know, a blowtorch of an AM signal down at the low end of the dial, and great personalities. And you know who programmed that station back then? I'm pretty sure it was Randy Michaels, who was one of the progenitors of right-wing talk radio, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure it's the same guy. But anyway, for the end of everything, except for the elite, all the radio stations at a signal, okay, at a given time, will simulcast Vera Lynn's song from the end of Dr. Strangelove, "We'll Meet Again, Don't Know Where, Don't
But
don't
We'll
know
Meet
when.
Again Some Sunny Day."
Yes, indeed.
And okay, let's go on down the rabbit hole. Trivia. Vera Lynn, of course, is the subject of the Pink Floyd song "On the Wall." Vera. Remember, when Pink sings, "Vera, Vera, what has become of you? Does anyone else recall how she said that we will meet again some sunny day?"
Yeah,
because that was an anthem, especially in Great Britain during the Second World War.
Oh yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, the music that was actually played in Dr. Strangelove is from that era. That's not made up for the movie. That's a vintage cut. But maybe I'm reading too much into it. But Laurel's comments and the scenario that he painted, it's not that much of a leap to think that some of this other stuff that I picked up along the way, 30 and 35 years ago or more, you know, the insights that were known then but not generally known otherwise, regarding the planet's carrying capacity, and now with the election of Trump, the so-called election of Trump, it's like, could he be the sign that we're not far away from the starting flag being dropped in this thing? And if that's the case, well, pucker up, boys and girls. It'll be time to kiss some asses goodbye, up to and including our own. Because I know you're not the elite, and I know I'm not the elite. All we do is know about them. We're not among them, so to speak.
No, I mean, I might be a hillbilly elitist, but I don't think it's going to get me into the. I don't think it's going to get me into the club.
No, you're not going down the shaft. Right now, we're all going down.
And you know, right? And of course, there's a Jerry Reed reference in that one.
Oh, really?
She got the gold mine. I got the shaft.
Yeah, okay.
But and of course, here in West Virginia, in certain down the shaft coal mines, they're raising Arctic char fish, I think, still. So there'll be plenty of good sushi, I guess.
Oh God.
I wish I was kidding. They literally raise fish in coal mine water.
Well, they're repurposing, Bob. That's what it's all about in today's world.
No, that's VAT, value added, yes.
Oh, okay. But, you know, maybe it's far-fetched, some of these notions that are being thrown out there. But then again, how can you tell? And by the time you actually do tell, it'll pretty much be too late. It may already be too late. Now, I know this is not contributing to a holly jolly Christmas. Here we are, the day before, the night before, the night before Christmas, and I'm bringing you down in a powerful way, and I don't mean to, and I'll blame it on Laurel and his dog. They're the ones who brought this up.
Oh, sure. Blame LT. Absolutely. Well, that's okay. That's okay. We hold Punky responsible for you, so, you know, fair's fair.
Well, all right. But it sure as hell got me thinking, and when I get to thinking, and there's a void of callers or whatever, I'll call in and throw it out there. And I hope I'm wrong. Good Lord, Agnes, I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, it's
I know.
Like,
Ron and Raleigh says, it sent me a YouTube clip. Carrying capacity, you say. Now I have to find out what the clip is.
All right.
It won't roll on air. I'm just checking it out on the tablet.
Okay.
Real quick. This is called dead air.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
There's the stupid ad.
It's that old thing that I keep saying, that oft-quoted great political and social philosopher Red Fox: when you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. and we may very well be there.
Oh, okay, and there it is, yeah. From The Matrix, Agent Smith, humans are a virus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Ron had in mind. But, yeah, I mean, carrying capacity is a real thing. And see, here's, I mean, I remember when Don Blankenswine, who I guess will soon be out of prison, poor thing, they'll hand him $2 and a new suit of clothes and send him walking out the door in that Club Fed out there in California. But he once talked about how coal prevented people from starving because people could have the electricity. But the fact of the matter is, the reason this planet is carrying the number of people it does is because we are largely content to let a whole bunch of those people live on the edge of something, edge of or over into outright starvation, while we, as the saying goes, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. I mean, I don't know if anybody else is like me, Scott, but I'm absolutely gobsmacked by concepts of distribution and production. I mean, the fact that I can go to a grocery store 6 miles up the road, and I can buy grapes there and strawberries. I thought I was crazy, but I caught them with the strawberries. I can buy that have been put on a boat in Chile, sent up the Pacific coast to L.A. on container ships, offloaded, put on trucks, and sent across the country. I mean, I'm amazed by the output of the oil industry, for instance. There's 70 billion barrels of oil a day. How do you do that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's great that we can walk into the local supermarket and get an incredible variety of anything we could possibly want to consume, but at what cost?
Well, and I don't limit it to the modern world. Ferg and I were in a little tiny museum in Cartersville, Georgia, a couple of years ago. At a Native American complex called Etowah Mounds. And they had in their collection there shell beads that they knew, they didn't suspect, they absolutely knew had come from the Great Lakes. And had been transported there by peoples who did not have draft animals. Everything was carried in a sack on their backs or dragged on a sled. You know, human determination is a fascinating and an inspiring thing. But when we do that, and the only motive for it is money, then we've got a problem.
Well, yeah, and a couple of...
I mean, do we really need to burn all that fuel because somebody in West Virginia needs strawberries in January? I mean, it's nice enough, I guess, but 100 years ago, when my ancestors were sustainable before sustainable was cool, they had strawberries in January, too. You know how they had them?
Well, they canned the ones that they picked.
But, you know, preserves and jams are yummy, but they are also a means of preserving, that's why they're called preserves, food for later usage.
Yeah. Well, and it, about a year ago, maybe a year and a half, out of the blue, I'm sitting here, and this notion came to me, and it's very quick, so I'll read it. Human suffering is neither noble or inevitable. It exists because we permit it to happen.
There
quite
we go.
Quite often, religious, political, and business forces encourage suffering as it serves to help further their ends, interests, and purposes. That's it, in a nutshell. That's how and why we find ourselves where we are. And the payoff to us, who are not the ultimately horribly downtrodden, the rest of us who are not quite there yet, but probably on our way, our payoff in that equation is the strawberries in the dead of winter, or whatever it is.
Well, and exactly, and let's kind of keep things in context here. The same capitalists who want to burn oil to fly lobsters from Maine to Las Vegas every day, are in large part supporters of the same governments, the right-wingers, who say that we cannot advance the rights of women in the developing world so that they can have a choice over when, if, and how many children they bear.
Oh, hell no. Well, look at the Catholic Church.
Ta-da! And the Muslim world, too, let's be honest, and the Hindu world.
Yes. Mindless fucking to please the Almighty who ain't there. What the hell kind of deal is that?
Well, remember the old Italian proverb. I'd love to know it in the Italian, but I don't speak Italian. Bed is the poor man's opera.
Yeah. Well, and Lenny
but
Bruce,
but the thing is, and of, I want to put this in context because before organized religion got hold of them, when they were simply tribal peoples, and I don't mean simply as a pejorative,
mm-hmm.
We know for a fact that indigenous populations take great care over population growth so that they don't fuck themselves out of house and home. That was the case with the indigenous peoples of this hemisphere, indigenous peoples on the African continent, indigenous peoples in Australia, and way, 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 way the hell back in time, indigenous peoples on the Eurasian continent. But if you inject some religion into it, say patriarchal religions in particular, then the first thing you have to do is take away a woman's ability to determine when, how often, and how many she reproduces. And that's Judaism, Islam, Christianity. It extends into Hinduism. I'm not sure about Buddhism or Sikhism. But it's the engine that charges the overpopulation dynamic. The ancient Greeks, the ancient Romans, God knows the ancient Celts. And the ancient everybody's took care not to induce starvation by virtue of overpopulation. Enter the patriarchal religion, and all of that is gone.
Yeah.
How many wives did Solomon have? How many wives did King David have? How many wives did Genghis Khan have? You know, more people on this planet have the DNA of Genghis Khan in them than any other human being. Because of deliberate patriarchal determination to oppress and prevent women from controlling the reproductive process, because men both fear and resent that process. God damn, and that's how you wind up with lobsters in Las Vegas. Son of a bitch, Scott.
Well, when those Europeans landed on these sunny shores once upon a time, and it the dynamic was replicated elsewhere in the colonial empire corrupting and defeating sort of nations, conquering nations, they viewed the indigenous populations as being nothing more than savages compared to the way that the Europeans were programmed to run things. And God knows we can't have any of these ignorant savages. And it turns out the so-called ignorant savages, as you pointed out, on a global basis, were wiser than the rest of the Europeans all put together. And their operating principles were...
So it does. So, you know, and maybe that's one of the takeaways as we run out of time here. Laurel seemed to think that this is all inevitable. Maybe it is. But it does not have to be. These are choices we have made. And not necessarily choices you or I or anybody else individually made, but by virtue of the fact that we were born co-opted into the system, it is goddamn difficult to break free of it.
Bingo.
You know, in a way, it's like Don Henley singing about the guy with the debt out on the road today. I saw, man, this is the DJ hour, isn't it? Out on the road today, I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. A little voice inside my head said, don't look back. You can never look back. The idea back then, what was it, 1983, 84, of a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac meant that, you know, that was some rich person who was trying to maintain his or her personal hippie credibility by putting a steal your face on his bumper.
Yeah,
you know what
my
I mean.
My favorite bumper sticker of that era, which I used to see every now and again, was "Die Yuppie Scum."
Oh no, I interviewed the "Die Yuppie Scum" lady outside of the 1988 Democratic National Convention in Atlanta.
Oh really?
Yeah, she was. That's all she did for 3 days. She had hats, she had badges, she had stickers, everything, and she just walked around outside the venue. Die yuppie scum, die yuppie scum, die yuppie scum, die yuppie scum, and she was she did a land office business.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, she's now yuppie scum. No, wait a minute.
Well, she probably rose into the class and put a Deadhead sticker on her Cadillac.
You've taken us fully around, and here we are.
Lobsters in Las Vegas, Scott. It's the mirror. It is the nightly miracle that is the Horn. So I will wish you a very happy evening. Punky seems content. He's offered a couple of amens and hallelujahs. I speak cockatiel after all. So you guys right, have a good evening.
Okay, take care.
Bye now. Scott and Punky in San Diego. Time to get out of here. I cannot thank you enough for everybody for wiping out the deficit this evening, filling in the hole. It's so nice to be out of it. Thank you, Lassie. No, thank you, Horn Family Community Congregation. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to everyone who participates, however you do, in this ongoing conversation. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.